Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 19, King Yayati Achieves Liberation, Text Number 4. Tasya Udaranopayam. Basta Kami Vichintayan. Yadata Tirtam Udritya. Bisa Nagrena Rodasi. Tasya of the she goat. Udarana Upayam. The means of deliverance from the well. Basta, the he goat. Kami, having lusty desires. Vichintayan, planning. Vyadata, executed. Tirtam, a way to come out. Udritya, digging the earth. Vishana agrena, by the point of the horns. Rodasi, at the edge of the well. Translation of purport by Zivan Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After planning how to get the she-goat out of the well, the lusty he-goat dug up the earth on the well's edge with the point of his horns in such a way that she was able to come out very easily. Purport. Attraction for women is the impetus for economic development. House, housing, and many other things meant for living comfortably in this material world. Digging up the earth to make way for the she-goat was a laborious task. But before accepting the she-goat, the he-goat underwent this labor. Aho griha shetra sutapta vitar janasya moho yam ahang mameti. The union between male and female provides the impetus for gaining a nice apartment, a good income, children, and friends. Thus one becomes entangled in this material world. What is the next verse, which is practically the same as this one? When the she-goat, who had very nice hips, got out of the well and saw the very handsome he-goat, she desired to accept him as her husband. When she did so, many other she-goats also desired him as their husband because he had a very beautiful bodily structure and a nice mustache and beard and was expert in discharging semen and in the art of sexual intercourse. Therefore, just as a person haunted by a ghost exhibits madness, the best of the he-goats, attracted by the many she-goats, engaged in erotic activities and naturally forgot his real business of self-realization. Purport. Materialists are certainly very much attracted by sexual intercourse. Yanmai tunadi grihamedi sukham hi tu cham. Although one becomes a grihasta, or a householder, to enjoy sex life to his heart's content, one is never satisfied. Such a lusty materialist is like a goat, for it is said that if goats, meant for slaughter, get the opportunity to enjoy sex before being killed. Human beings, however, are meant for self-realization. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shudyat tasmad brahma sokyam tunandam. Human life is meant for realization of the self, the spirit soul within the body. Deho smin ita dehe. A materialistic rascal does not know that he is not the body, but a spirit soul, a spiritual soul within the body. However, one should understand his real position and cultivate knowledge by which to get free from bodily entanglement. Like an ordinary person who acts madly, haunted by ghosts, a materialist haunted by the ghost of lust forgets his real business so that he can enjoy so-called happiness, this bodily concept of life. The idea of Krishna consciousness is Vishaya Vinivartante, Niraharasidehinam, Rasavarjam Rasopyasya, Param Drishva Nivartate. That the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, one becomes fixed in consciousness. In other words, one cannot give up materialistic consciousness, which is explained here as beginning with lust to enjoy sex life, without experiencing something superior. And it's not possible to experience something superior unless one follows the process by which one can become eligible to get Krishna's mercy in the form of the internal energy of Krishna, Daivi Prakritim Ashritya, so that one can experience something superior. Krishna is equal to everyone, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita at the end of the third chapter. Evam buddhe param buddhva samstabhyatmanam atmana jahishadru mahabaho kamarupam durasada. Thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, one should control the lower self by the higher, and thus by spiritual strength conquer the insatiable enemy known as lust. So it's possible to give up sense enjoyment, but if the taste remains, it won't last, that renunciation won't last very long. Because if the taste remains, that means that the higher taste is not experienced. If the higher taste is not experienced, then one has to go for the best possible happiness one can find. The nature of the soul is ananda. So the soul must experience happiness, otherwise it'll simply look for happiness. In Krishna consciousness, we understand that if one becomes conscious of Krishna, one becomes conscious of all happiness, and therefore one finds, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, that sukham adyantikam yat tad buddhi grayam itendriyam veti yatra na chaiva layam tam chalati tatvataha yam lava chapalam lava manyatena adikam tata yasmin sita na dukena guruna pivrichalyate. Upon gaining, it's a nice verse. It starts with Chalachitam niruda yoga sevaya yatra chevatmanatmanam pashanatminitushiti sukamat yankrikam yattad buddhi grami atendriyam veti netina chayvayam sitam chalati tatvataha. The path of perfection is called trance or samadhi, when one's mind is completely refrained from all material mental activities by the process of yoga. This is characterized by one's ability to see the self with a pure mind and to relish and rejoice in that self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, one thinks that there is no greater gain. This is indeed actual freedom from all material miseries arising from material contact. So in other words, if we have pure consciousness, yatro paramite chitam, that state is called perfection, when one's mind is completely restrained from all material mental activities by the practice of yoga. So the yoga system may try to restrain the consciousness from material thoughts. And therefore it takes many thousands of years to reach perfection, even in the best of circumstances. What to speak of a situation when there's only distracting thoughts? The whole atmosphere, not only the physical thoughts that they're putting out through the internet, through the newspapers, through modern education, but even the water, it's contaminated. Even the air is contaminated. People's thoughts are contaminated. People's thoughts actually affect us. If you walk down the street and you see someone angry, then it's actually like eating their anger. If you're not in Krishna consciousness, then you're actually experiencing, tasting their anger, because they're emitting it like a like a an antenna, like a radio wave, anger, lust, greed, madness. It's emitted like a radio, just like Krishna consciousness is also emitted like a radio wave. So people are emitting their consciousness. It's not only limited to them. What to speak if the cook is in passion, then you taste all the hot spices that they put into it. And if the cook's in ignorance, then you probably would fall asleep right after eating. Not only the fact that how they cook the food, but they're actually putting their consciousness into the food. We're actually eating their consciousness. Therefore, it's advised that we be in Krishna consciousness when we're cooking. So, without actually getting bathed in the atmosphere of Krishna consciousness, then one will simply imagine, because the whole material world is based on imagination. It all starts with, well, I'm not really doing anything. I'm not really happy. Well, what would make me happy? And Maya says, well, what happens if you had a nice house? Well, that sounds good. And you had a nice bed to sleep in. Well, that's even better. And then we put a nice she-goat in there. Considering you're a goat. Wow, that's really nice. And then we'll put everything, you know, everything modern in there. You won't have to do very much, you know. The microwave oven, the electric oven, pizza oven, everything. We'll put everything in there. And you won't have to pay for it. You just have to have a credit card and you charge it for your next lifetime. Then we think, well, that's great. What, that sounds like a wonderful idea, a wonderful plan. Just like before the universe was created, Brahma himself had to hear Krishna explain the plan to him a couple of times. Even Brahma. It wasn't that Brahma woke up one day and decided, you know, let me try and create a universe and see what it would be like. No, the whole thing is created mentally first. Everything was imagined first. Krishna gave him a whole blueprint because the souls that had to come into this world had a certain karma. And therefore, Brahma in our universe had to create a certain universe to fit that karma. So although it appears that Brahma is the creator, but actually he's the secondary creator. The creation was first created in Brahma's mind by Krishna. He gave him the intelligence, what the universe would look like. Down to where each one of our chairs is in this room right now. Where we're sitting. Everything was there in Brahma. Of course, I don't know. At the beginning, I don't think Brahma had to get into all the details because material nature works as a natural sequence. But what the sun would look like, what the chariot of the sun would look, all these details were already there. And then Brahma, from his mind, when the details were there, then he willed things to go into creation. And then, therefore, Krishna, because Brahma is the most pious person and Krishna gave him the intelligence what to do, then Krishna manifested through his energy the desire of Brahma, the very desire for what the creation would be. Then Krishna willed it into being through his material nature. So that's the universe, and our small little cells, we're living in our little universe called our body. And we're creating within our mind, or Maya is creating for us, a situation. And then we're willing that this creation be put into practice. Because we're very disjointed in Kali Yuga. We don't know what we want. And therefore, we wind up with a mishmash. It's like trying to create a horse and using a pig, an antelope, a goat, a rhinoceros, and trying to put the different bodily parts together and create a horse out of it. It's just not possible. That's why our lives may be considered a little bit disorganized. Because we're trying to do 100 different things. We're trying to desire, we're desiring 100 different things and trying to put them together into a life. But it usually doesn't work very well. In any case, we're willing different parts of it. Every day we wake up, we're willing different parts of our life to be manifested. Some of it, hopefully, is in Krishna consciousness. Obviously, it is. And some of it is just the result of our bewildered consciousness. We're doing so many things just out of, we're willing so many things into being, which have nothing to do with either our reality or anything, if we objectively looked at it, would even appear to be reality. But because we're unconscious most of the time, therefore we're desiring things and doing things which actually have nothing to do with our real self. Or what we, if we thought about it, we'd actually decide that this is not a good thing. Even if I get what Krishna, what I'm desiring, it's not going to help me very much. But we're doing it out of habit, out of our conditioned nature. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is there simply to help us consider. That's why Yayati is talking to Devayani, just so that she might consider. He's not talking anything really that profound. After all, it wasn't a very creative exercise. It wasn't that Devayani had to figure out what the mystery is of the she-goat and the he-goat. He made it as obviously as possible. But he didn't say, hey, you're just like a goat. And I'm a goat too. And we've been living like a goat. Well, he just told the story about a goat, which obviously was Devayani and Yayati and Sharmista and others. Just so Devayani wouldn't say, hey, wait a second, are you criticizing me? No, I'm just criticizing the goat. It's not my, I'm not criticizing. I love you, but this goat, my God, look at this goat. So that's a clever way that Bhagavatam uses these things. The fourth canto, we came on King Bharachi telling the story. Telling the story of Bharachi. And the whole analogy being utilized because King Prachibharachi was, if he would have said, hey, you know, you're going to hell because you're killing all these animals, the king would have said, really, Narada Muni, did you ever think of coming back? I mean, I'm a little busy right now. I mean, I heard some, you know, people criticizing, I didn't expect a sage coming here would just, you know, spend his time trying to criticize me. I'm the king, you know. No, he had to tell him indirectly, otherwise people get disturbed. I probably say, we quote dogs, hogs, camels, and asses from the Bhagavatam. People say, well, you're so critical. Why are you always criticizing people? So Prabhupada said, I'm not criticizing anyone. Krishna is criticizing everyone. I'm just repeating what he says, that's all. If you want to get on anyone's case, get on Krishna's case. Of course, we shouldn't imitate Prabhupada either and start criticizing people. And say, oh, I'm not criticizing him. It's Krishna who's doing it. No, Prabhupada did it very expertly, so people actually got the message and made some improvement. And if we're not so expert and we criticize people, instead of making improvement, they'll simply start criticizing us to let us know how it's like to be criticized. In any case, here we have Devayani and we have King Yayati and Sharmista, and they're telling the story about, even though we want to be happy in the material world and we're trying it out in so many different ways, according to the plan that's given to us, because it's not, we didn't make it up, as Brahma didn't make up the plan for the universe, we're being fed these plans. You need it, I mean, especially in Kali Yuga nowadays, you know, what the ideal image is of a person, what's beauty, what's ugly, what's sane, what's insane, what's a nice house look like, what is the relationship between man and woman, what the children are supposed to be like, what education is like. The people are just being fed these things constantly. But being fed by people from the lowest grade, generally speaking, the people controlling the mass media, the social media, the educational system, they're just of the deepest of ignorance. And therefore people are just being fed ignorant and ignorant conceptions in their minds, and therefore they're nothing else is filling up their mind but garbage. So garbage in, garbage out. And therefore their lives are just manifestation of whatever they're hearing, whatever they're being influenced by. They're trying to manifest. That's why someone could sacrifice his kidney to buy an iPhone. So much intensity is the that this object is so valuable. You could sacrifice your own kidney to get it. Some piece of metal and plastic you'll actually sacrifice your life for. Because people are, we could say they're brainwashed, but they're not washing their brains. They're filling it up with cow dung. Therefore, we should be a little careful not to get too much influenced by modern society by listening to their propaganda. Instead, we should try to hear as much as possible what Krishna has to say in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And persons like Ayati talking to Shamista, rather than the head of Playboy magazine writing his articles to encourage everyone to become a bunny in their next lifetime. Then we can actually make some progress in life. So everything begins with hearing. That's why we have these classes, not to torture people. You can't get prasadam unless you come. No, it's to give us some information. So something other than the garbage that's being broadcast 24 hours a day and social media and everything else, we can fill, have a little space for Krishna there too. Put a little deity and worship him once in a while. And therefore our lives will become spiritual rather than just as everyone else's life is, just a repetition of whatever the latest propaganda is. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? We don't do anything. Krishna increases it. I mean, if you want to do better, then find out someone, then learn from someone who knows how to do it better than you do. Get some inspiration from them. And if possible, try to serve them in some way, at least serve their example or instructions. Read more Srimad Bhagavatam so we know what we're doing, why we're just trying to distribute books. So every person we meet, we see as Krishna's servant rather than as a big wallet that we can get something out of. And try to be patient. Know that we're simply trying to become instruments. Even if it doesn't work out, even if we're only distributing a few books, be happy that at least we're instruments for Krishna doing that much. If you save one soul, it's not that Krishna said, oh, you only saved one soul today. Just give up. It's not worthwhile saving at least one soul. Of course, if it was us, the soul that got saved, we think that was worthwhile. So we should be satisfied that for that much Krishna has empowered us. And if we practice and pray to Krishna, learn from his authorities, from his representatives, then the result is that gradually we may increase. Krishna will give us the intelligence. It's all up to Krishna to give us the intelligence by which we can meet someone and convince them, inspire them to take the book. Krishna in the heart is the one who's doing it. And Krishna is in our heart telling us what we can do to assist them, to inspire them. It's not due to our innate potency that we distribute anything. Or that people naturally they surrender to us. No, Krishna sends us the people who are interested, and he gives us the intelligence what to say, and he gives us them the intelligence and the inspiration to take the book. So we should just try to become better instruments, chant our rounds better, read the books more, pray to Krishna more. Especially prayer on Sankirtan is important. We ask Krishna to send someone, then they'll send someone. That's not just, you know, prayer is nice, but we also, that feeling has to arise. Especially it comes when you distribute a book, you have a good, nice feeling. You say, well, that's nice. Let me feel that one again. Let me distribute another book. That makes me feel even better. And then you feel better and better and better. And you say, well, maybe I should just stay out here. First, you, I don't want to go out. Oh, no. They're going to eat me alive. And then you go out and you show the book. You say, hey, that wasn't bad. Hey, you over here, why don't you take one too? And then if we actually get the mood, and the vision, that these people are all part of my spiritual family, then we might actually, you know, think, have some purpose in life. Other than the artist feeling good, we can actually feel better by seeing people as part of a spiritual family. Rather than just as an object to making me feel good, then we can actually try to help others feel good, and that will make us feel even more better. And that's the impetus. That's the vision, the experience, coming from relying on Krishna, praying to him, not only verbally, but even when we're just looking around and seeing who's there, Krishna is the one who will guide us. Go for that person, or go for that person, or don't go, say this. This is how, you know, Krishna will guide us. We just pay attention to what we're doing. Not an anxiety, I'm out here all day, no one's taking a book, this is horrible, I hate the people. No, we have to get in contact with Krishna. Krishna is not, this is not Krishna's message. Oh, I hate this, I don't want to be here, get me out of here. That's not what Krishna is trying to tell us. He's trying to tell us, pay attention to what you're doing, and then I'll guide you, and things will work out much better. Yes?
So,
I can only understand around half what you're saying. There you go. Okay.
When I'm doing books, sometimes many times actually, people are saying they're stressed out and they have anxiety and things like that. And so when I see that they are interested, so I sort of try to make a little bit connection with them. So I don't want to make them feel that, you know, I'm just giving you selling or less, selling the book and you give me money. I don't want to make them feel like this. Because this is also not the truth. So I sort of try to make some connections with them and be a little warm to them and, you know, invite them to the temple and things like that. So they can relate a little bit. But just asking, like, then especially ladies, so they want to give you a hug. So somebody was telling me that you shouldn't, give a hug to people because
well, you're not taking their energy when they give a donation. When you're talking to them, you're not exchanging energy. I mean, if someone wants to give you a hug and they're not, you know, what are you going to, oh, stop, don't touch me, I'm a devotee, you're a karmi.
Yeah, exactly. I always give them back because, yeah, I think it's
an overuse. Do you feel good when you give them a hug? Yeah, so then you'll be able to become more empowered to distribute more books. How many people give you a hug every day? In the temple, when you don't go in book distribution, how many people are giving you a hug every day?
In the temple or on book distribution?
In the temple.
Hardly one.
Do you like people hugging you?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, so anyhow, it's another plus for going out of book distribution. Least
sometimes
people.
I only
what's that?
Sometimes I see, like, yesterday I met this really nice girl. She was really nice and very nice. So I just like,
good. Ladies need hugs, don't they? Everyone needs a hug. Prabhupada said we should always be in that mood of hugging. Anything else? Yes, Prabhupada said that we should always be at least in the mood of hugging, even if we don't get. Anything else? Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.